Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, Surviving the 21st Century, a look at health and nutrition in our modern world. And I'm personally still trying to find some health and nutrition in it, but that's another story. Joining me from Southern California are the research and writing team of Manny Barling and his wife, Ashley Brooks. It's great to talk to you both again.
Well, good morning to our friends on the West Coast, and good afternoon to our friends on the East Coast.
Good morning to everybody.
Manny, I know that you're a bit of a music fan. Does the name Ravi Shankar mean anything to you?
Yes, as does his daughter Nora Jones.
Right. Well, earlier this week I got a very unexpected delivery, a set of five new Ravi Shankar CDs. I haven't listened to them yet, but I've got to admit I'm mightily curious. The man, if he's still alive, must be older than dirt.
I just want to make sure none of them are titled Music for the Taliban. That's all I want to know. You know, are they new as in brand new or new as in new music?
I don't know. It was from a PR company, and it just arrived, and I went, oh, Ravi Shankar. Oh, my goodness, there's five of them.
You know, those of us in the 60s generation who saw a fair amount of Ravi Shankar probably thought he looked old at the age of five. So for all we know, he's younger than us, but he's always looked like a very old man.
Right. You know, I started to think about it, and, wind back to the 60s. He looked like he was in his 60s then.
Well, yeah. And he made George Harrison look like he was in his 60s, too, within an hour.
Right. Anyway, I guess we should get on with the program, seeing as we don't know much about Ravi's nutritional intake.
I just want to know, is there any MSG or GMOs in this CD?
I'm not sure. I haven't had the memory.
You got to think about it, though.
It could be made from corn.
Did you read the label?
Polyvinyl corn.
I don't know if the versions I received are in the final packaging for the public. So maybe I don't have RDAs on mine. Okay. On with the program. As always, our phone lines are open, and we do welcome your questions and comments. Our switchboard number is area code 646-378-1120. This week, we're going to be exploring the world of food labels, specifically the murky world of RDAs. That stands for Recommended Daily Allowance. We'll also be having our recipe of the week, our shopping tips, and I have a sneaking hunch that some products residing in your kitchen cabinet are going to be getting a mention, and I doubt they're going to be receiving much of a glowing review. Manny, as always, I'm going to be playing the role of the guy that asks the stupid questions, a role I might add that comes very naturally to me. So here's the question for both of you. In simple terms, and in an ideal world with no one playing games, what is an RDA?
Well, it's starting it with no one playing games. We will get to that part later. So let's just start off with what RDA is supposed to be. RDA, we'll start with how it actually was created. It was created during the World War II, and it was presented by all part of a committee established by the United States National Academy of Sciences in order to investigate issues in nutrition that might affect the national defense. Then, because food was being rationed during the war, the food guides created by the government agency to direct citizens' nutritional intake also took into the food availability into account. So then in the 1950s, the United States government agriculture said, geez, we need to revise this. So then they decided to revise the RDA of nutrition, and then they would update it every 5 to 10 years. So the last time that it was actually updated was 2005. And they do it through creating a formula, which is part of a dietary reference intake. So you say, what is that? Because I really have never seen that on a label. But the dietary reference intake is several different things go into it. First, you have an estimated average requirement, which is they look at people who are 50% of the people in a certain age group, and they review the scientific literature. Then they go into recommended dietary allowance, and they say, okay, this is the level of nutrition for 97 to 80% of healthy individuals at a certain life stage and gender, and they calculate that. Then they go in, they go adequate intake will be demographic group. Then they go a UL tolerant upper intake level. They don't tell anybody this upper level is based on a very healthy 25-year-old group of probable men. Okay.
That excludes you and I.
So they have different levels that you really don't ever see on the tin cans or the boxes. They just put down RDA. So you're actually getting 97 to 98%. But when you actually look at it and you start to wonder, I keep wondering, who are these study groups? Who are these people? Where do these people come from? How do they come up with, you know, say, for example, vitamin A? You know, it's a minimal amount. A vitamin C, 75 milligrams. That's all they're saying. 75 to 90 milligrams is normal for men and women, and that's what we should have. So as I went on looking at it, I was looking at the fats and the sugars and the proteins, and first they would say the summary of each one of these kept coming up with the same summary, which was each one's for fuel, each one's for energy, but, gee, we can't really come up with a true amount of fat. So they kind of loosely did the fat one, even though it looks pretty real on the can. It set forth the fat because there are no insufficient data to determine a defined level of fat intake. Have you ever heard of that, Simon? I mean, that's part of the DRI is what they came up with. Now, they then also say the same thing with sugar. We can't really come up with a recommendation for sugar. But and part of this recommendation, they base all of it on a percentage of milligrams of two things. First, it's grams, it's weight, which is grams and milligrams, and the percentage of what a 2,000-calorie diet should be, 1,600, 1,400, 1,200, 1,000. So each one is done differently. But the ones that you see routinely at the store are based on 2,000 calories, and that's what your RDA is based on. So you're not really seeing, you're seeing minimal. So then I thought, you know, I really want to know who's behind the last DRI. So that to me was very interesting, is that we decided to go look at who's behind the board. Now I'm going to read what's on the front of the DRI book, which is your RDA, okay? It's the governing board members of the National Research Center. Those members are drawn from the Council of National Academy of Science, Council of National Academy of Engineering, Institute of Medicine. Now that sounds really great, and it's a very impressive list. Then you go to fund contributions. Now, the fund, they actually take contributions to the people who are actually on the board, but it says here, the opinions of the conclusion expressed herein are those of the subcommittee. Now, this is, as a Catholic, I learned one thing. There's two lies, the lie of omission, and then there's the lie, okay? This says, do not necessarily reflect those of the funder. What does that mean, Simon? Does that mean it really doesn't reflect the, you know, fund people, or doesn't it? So then we said, okay, let's look at who's behind the fund. Oh, I love this list. And this is only part of the list, so they let us know, because they don't really put the whole list out there, who's actually the financing the DRI. And most of it's done in Washington. So you have your Danon Institute, which are, you know, promoting excellence in nutrition and research. I go, okay, that's great.
And I might interject, this is the same Danon Institute who started playing around with yogurt, but we'll get to them later.
Right, which yogurt became the big deal, even though it's got a lot of high fructose corn syrup and a lot of other really bad ingredients, toxic ingredients in it. Here's the Life Institute, which is their drug discovery program, genetics, biotech type lab, and they do a reprogram of adult cells, not an alternative of embryonic stem cells. Now, that's part of who is behind this DRI, your RDAs. Then you go on to the other donor funds. It says Dietary Reference Corporate Donor Fund. The Dishi Fine Chemicals, they're a biotech company, GMO, food additives, chemical synthetics, and vitamins, synthetic vitamins. The Chemin Foods, you have your synthetic antioxidants, your esters, which are the people who make up your MSG, and they are a marketing company who preserve your life shelf of what your – they put the preservatives in all your food. They are part of the fund. This one got me tremendously and got Manny, both of us. We're still going, what? M&M Mars Company. Are you still there, Simon? Okay.
Oh, I love it when a candy maker tells me what I should be eating every day.
Okay, especially when we get to I want the listeners, hopefully they'll stay around for the ingredients in those. Okay, the Mead Johnson Nutrition, which is the maker of baby formula and medicine and what else, Manny? Lots of other chemicals.
Oh, you know, Johnson & Johnson, every product, baby powder, you name it.
Okay, the next one part of your fund is Nabisco Food Incorporation, which is also part of the subsidiary of your Kraft Foods. Now, once again, they do not necessarily reflect those of the funder. Now, why didn't they say it does not? Does not necessarily gets me. And then, of course, it goes on from there. It's like, oh, you've got your Nature Source Vitamin E Association, which are synthetic vitamins. Roach Vitamins, which are synthetic vitamins.
No pun intended.
Yeah, U.S. Borax and the Weider Nutritional Group.
Is that
so this is part of your
19?
Funding that goes behind the RDA. Do you
wow.
love that? So
oh,
then
I,
I'm going
I
doing more research. Go ahead,
no,
Simon.
No, Simon was fine.
Oh, so ahead, Simon.
All right. Before we get into the downside, shall we say.
Oh, that wasn't?
Oh,
I was shocked by who was funding it. I was shocked. And that's just to get part of the list.
What we find on our cans and packaged goods is this RDA, and it's based on a 2,000-calorie diet.
Correct.
Now, who fits that profile? I'm sure that a construction worker or a lumberjack likely needs more fuel than someone like me, a book reviewer who spends his day, you know, sat reading.
This is part of the biggest problem I had with these RDAs when I was looking at them. And the problem is exactly what I was saying. They broke it into where you have your RDA, which is for the average Joe, who's 97 to 98%. They're saying the average Joe is all of us, 97 to 98%. And then you have the UL, which are the 25-year-olds, which goes to a maximum amount your body can handle. So they actually set this based on whatever group they're putting together. But to find out what the group is and to figure out their research is a whole very difficult thing. I think one of the books that I pulled up was a book called Ridiculous Dietary Allowance. And there's a Dr. Steve Hickey and a Dr. Hillary Roberts who said that many people who are consuming the RDA levels of vitamins are likely to suffer from a deficiency disease and premature death. And then they went on, he was a person who was really studied Linus Pauling, and he was really into Linus Pauling and the vitamin C, which really disturbed me. That one, I couldn't get past the vitamin C on the RDAs. They're saying the average person should have no more than 60 milligrams, and I hear people say this all the time, especially people who aren't into science at all or into the reading at all. They believe that that's all you should have. But the problem is he went in and he said, you know, I've been studying Linus Pauling, these two doctors, and I'm going to go ask the people at who are the scientists who put these RDA tests together. Let me go bring the research to them and see if I've been wrong about Linus Pauling's research completely. And he had the proof positive all of these studies. And he started off asking the person and the scientists who did the study. And then he discovered this person didn't know how to run the equipment. So the RDA on vitamin C, and I'm just going to use that as an example because that's the only example that blares at me, that he could not figure out the machine. So he went back and he said, no, you're doing the equipment wrong. This is what you need to do. This is what the study is. These are 20 to 40 years worth of studies done on vitamin C. You know, here's all the examples of all the patients that were healed by vitamin C, and this is the dose, and this is what you need to do. The next thing he knew, not only would the scientists not speak to him, but he couldn't get anybody from the government to even take his phone call. So he went from a respected doctor whose phone call was taken by the people at these boards to nobody responding to him. And this was his response to the last RDA done. So every time I look at them, I question it, Simon. And so to come up with an answer that to say, okay, let's do the good guy, you know, RDA, I'm looking at what the totals are, and it's hard to say if this is really accurate. And what is this based on?
Well, I think the larger question is, what on earth does it mean?
Yes.
Well, actually, it really means nothing, except there's pressure on them to produce information to the general public, and they try to control that information. So if you have to produce information, and as all businessmen do, they try to produce the very least, because if they produce more than that, then, of course, someone could interpret it as something poor. I'll give an example. Most scientists and researchers say that you don't need salt in your diet, that you get plenty of salt naturally in foods.
Consistently across the board.
So it became a fight over what the RDA, what your recommended daily allowance of salt would be. The American Heart Association fought like crazy to get it down to zero, and they compromised and said, well, it's got to be at least, it can't be more than 1,500. The industry worried that it affected the sale of the products, lobbied through the number of 2,500. But does the number 2,500 relate to your health every day? No. Does it relate to anything other than their concern about selling their products? No, it doesn't. So when you look at it, you go, well, what is this really about? Well, again, what it's about is protecting the sale of products. And as we go through most of these, you'll see why we say that. And bear in mind, as we point out in our books and a lot of our lectures, that one of the problems with a genetically modified food is it has no taste. It's just dull. So to add MSG and salts and other things to the food is really necessary, or they're taste-testing foods. People go, oh, that's bland. I don't want to eat that. So they have to literally, like, you know, we all have friends and sometimes even ourselves at different ages who can't pass up the hot sauce. So no matter what we cook, we want a little spicier. And certainly living close to New Orleans, I think that's in the Bible in New Orleans, isn't it? Right after Genesis,
it's compulsory.
Pour something hot into your mixture, right? So I know I'm not preaching to the choir here. But basically, the food manufacturers to sell their food are fighting for taste. That's why they brag that we can create 50 million different tastes that'll satisfy your palate. Yes, but will it satisfy your doctor, particularly the one who treats you for cancer? So this is where the problem comes in, and it will demonstrate that through various products as we go along.
And I was hoping when I was really studying the RDAs that I could come up with saying, you know, the logical reason of why they created this, which is why they did, is so people could have some sort of standard and some kind of understanding of what they need to take in daily. But as I read through the material and kept reading it and studying, as we've done worth constantly with the books, and then again to get ready for the show, it was just very disappointing to me to make more and more discoveries of, it's as Manny always says and as people in business say, follow the money. And as I followed the money, M&M Mars is funding this thing? I mean, is that insane? That's insane. I mean, not to be disrespectful, because I used to like M&Ms till I've read what's on the packages now, but, that's really something. And then, of course, the new labeling is going to be in the restaurants. That's the big FDA thing. And then when they lobby that through, it's limited to the chains. And who knows really what's going to be told in the labeling.
Right.
Who knows?
In the limited research that I've done, and it's certainly nowhere near the amount of time that the pair of you have spent, but I hear the term RDA, RDV, or more recently just DV. Is there a difference, or is this just a printing thing?
No, it's not a printing thing. It's part of what they're saying with the dietary reference intake. So they have changed initials. So if you're I'm sorry, which one was it? DI is what you said?
Yeah, the daily values one.
Right,
yeah.
Daily value, right. And it's, again, part of this, part of how they are evaluating and coming up with your daily intake. And it's interesting how they're saying it's often 97 to 98% of people. But, I mean, who are these people? Who are the study? I mean, did they take 10 people and put them in a room?
Well, and they always try to take healthy people. Of course, they have to search for those in our country these days. And, and basically what they're trying to do is create a number that nobody can understand, nobody can relate to, and is no threat to them. They certainly aren't objective, and they certainly aren't really concerned with your daily health. If so, they wouldn't put in the kind of good items into their food that they do. So one has to question their motives. And, frankly, we all know that when that's an issue, that motive is always basically money.
Now, one of the things with AARP is that they put out a whole list of vitamins. And these vitamins are all based on the RDA. And I thought, oh, great, this will be terrific. I'm going to use this on the show. This would be fabulous. So then, again, I went back to the vitamin C because that's where I start. And, Dr. Dantini is definitely, we'll get into that. Vitamin C, now I'm going to read to you what they say. It's important for wound healing, boosts immune system, it requires for growth and repair of tissues in all parts of your body. Now, why would you, now this one says it's 75 milligrams and other RDAs are 60. Why would you only limit someone to 75 milligrams of vitamin C if you know that it's going to boost somebody's immune system? Or it's going to help them heal wounds. And why, when somebody is ill, they're not given it like Linus Pauling? I mean, he spent years doing studies on this.
Yeah, for those people who aren't familiar with Linus Pauling was a scientist who lived to, I think, age 93. He was the greatest proponent of vitamin C, wrote maybe 6 or 7 different books. He is the first, and to my knowledge, still the only person to win 2 Nobel Prizes by himself in 2 different categories. He had a nutrition lab and was basically the driving force of Stanford's University's famous School of Medicine. This medical school at Oregon State is named after him, for example. And is, I would say, a peer. If there were an Mount Olympus of science, he would be sitting on it right next to Albert Einstein, one of the most brilliant men of the previous century. He had the unmitigated nerve to challenge modern medicine and write papers on why if you took 7,500 cc's of vitamin C every day, you could live for a long time. Well, he lived to 93 doing it, and he was vital and still writing books up until the time he died. I became an advocate of his because I live in California and grew up here and had an opportunity to see him lecture at Caltech when I was as a student in the 60s. And I really was like an opportunity to see Einstein. He was the most brilliant man I've ever seen in my life. He just glowed when he walked into the room. And I would go 10 years. I've gone 20 years without the flu or cold right now because I take high doses of vitamin C every day. And, of course, I take a Chinese herb, which we don't have time to discuss today. But the fact is, they modern medicine, as in the medical establishment, somewhat like the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower described making war materials, were afraid that his concepts would put them out of business. So they started defaming him. Oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's a fool. So taking probably Kotide, as the most brilliant scientist of the 20th century, and they started defaming him. So later, other scientists went back and proved that he was absolutely right, and they were wrong, and they are still trying to defame him. So this just goes on and on and on, because if you suggest anything contrary to what the industry wants to do in terms of selling, then, of course, you become a fool overnight. So here is a guy who is one of the most brilliant scientists, one of the most published scientists, two-time Nobel Prize winner, and he became the biggest fool in the world the minute he bucked the drug companies.
And one of the other things that isn't said, as I'm looking at this RDA chart, is, well, I'm going to pull up, like, vitamin E. They say it should be 15 milligrams. What does it do? It helps protect the cells from damage, and it reduces the risk of cancer, heart disease, and other chronic ailments. But they say immediately further research needs to be done. There's been lots of research. But the fund itself that is part of that fund, which we read, that is one of the companies that actually makes synthetic vitamin E. Now, nowhere on the RDA does it say, on the cans, on the boxes, anywhere on the RDA, or even on this list, that if you take vitamin E, and it's the difference is D1 tocopherol and D tocopherol. I always get that. My tongue gets tied. But it's a one is a synthetic, and one is absolutely 100%. But they never say if you're taking a synthetic of these RDAs, you're only getting 50% because your body cannot process the synthetic. And they're saying 50%, but is that because 50% of it is actually organic and your body can process it? They don't say that either. But if you're buying your vitamins at the general market because they're cheap because they're made like the tin can. I mean, they're synthetic, and you're not getting the vitamins you need. So even if people try to follow the RDA, if they're following the RDA and they're taking in synthetics, they are not getting any of the recommended daily allowance, which I'm shocked. Government should be saying this to people, but yet they're not saying this to people. And I'm disappointed because this is about health. This is about people and their health, and you don't mess with a person's health. I mean, you don't mess with people anyway, but that to me is really bothersome.
You mentioned at the beginning that the RDA basically had its roots in World War II and the fact that food was rationed. So presumably back then it was a much more realistic idea. You know, this is what people need to eat to maintain health.
Correct. Right.
When did it start to change?
It's changed in 1950, and then they updated it every 5 to 10 years. They decided that their board would handle every 5 to 10 years.
Well, let me add something to that. We had a strange thing happen in our country. Prior to the 1950s, doctors basically controlled medicine. Pharmacists controlled the type of drugs that were used, and basically people were happy. At some point, control started to change. The big corporations got more power. They lobbied through a set of laws between 1949 and 1952 that allowed the government to determine that only doctors could prescribe drugs, and therefore all these drugs that became available to the public had to be done by prescription. So they cut out pharmacists and other people and natural remedies. So the major drug corporations suddenly control the flow of drug and medicine. At the same time, seizing the opportunity, so many of these companies as I mentioned, are a member of both Big Pharma, which is the pharmaceutical groups, and Big Food, which is what we name all these major corporations like Kraft and Unilever and Cargill and Tyson Foods to manufacture all their food stuff. They saw an opportunity to gain control over the foods that were being made and distribute them. So by fostering these government entities and using political power to control them, through their political might and donations, gained power over the food industry as well. So we went from, you know, a government, and it's funny because I see all these Tea Party and other people who want free government, but it's not there when it comes to food, drugs, etc. Basically, those are controlled by big corporations that basically determine what we eat and do every day. So during that period in the 50s, where we got into the Ozzie and Harriet period, where you blindly followed everything the big brother and the government told you, this is when food became control. So for those of you who are younger, this is why my generation, the 60s, got up and said, you know, I'm tired of our parents lying to us. We're tired of the government lying to us. We know you can't hide under a desk and survive an atomic bomb attack. Because our parents and everything on the news would say, oh, don't worry, if there's an atomic bomb, just duck and hide under your desk. It'll all
duck
go
and tuck.
By.
And duck isn't and that what that show you showed
me? I think it was duck and tuck.
Duck and
actually,
cover.
Duck and cover,
there
right.
You go.
I actually, while we were looking through the old Turner Classic movies, there were some newsreels, and we recorded some of these old movie-tone newsreels from the war and afterwards, and they had the whole 8-minute duck and cover show that I saw as a child. And I always tell Ashley this story. I went to private Catholic schools, and like a good Catholic boy, I was supposed to be compliant. Well, I wasn't. I got up one morning early with my older brothers to watch them blow up a little atoll in the South Pacific called Inuwetok. I don't know if you remember that. I think you were too young, Simon. And I looked at this mushroom cloud from a hydrogen bomb and said to my brother, you know, why am I hiding under a desk? I mean, I was like, you know, 8 years old, and I said, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. So in California, in fact, across our country, on the last Friday of every month, they blew a civil defense siren that was ungodly loud, and everybody had to go to a civil defense shelter or act out this ruse about atom bombs. So we were supposed to duck under a desk and hide so the atom bomb wouldn't kill us. Well, you know, the next time it happened, I just wouldn't duck. And the principal said, why? I said, well, you're wasting my time. I'm going to be dead anyway. And so the nun in my class sent me to the principal. So I get the principal and said, why aren't you doing that? And they said, did you see the hydrogen bomb? Are you crazy? You know, I'm like 8 years old going, why would I duck under a desk? I might as well, you know, say a prayer. I'm done. So they called my parents and told them I wasn't very compliant. So I get home. My mother said to me, it is absurd, but couldn't you just duck under the desk and ignore them? So now you all understand how I became a lawyer. It started very, very young.
and it goes back to compliance. If you don't comply and you don't go along with the rules, you know, and it's compliance. Compliance means you read the RDA and trust us, and that's the end of that. Just trust us.
Actually, similar to your school story, I have one. I was probably 20 years old. A good friend and I would love to bait one of the people that frequented the local pub, and inevitably the subject of, you know, atomic weaponry would come around, and it was right up there on the level of duck and cover. So one day we walked in and we sat down, and we both had brown paper sacks, and eventually he bit. He said, what are those for? Oh, in case of atomic attack, we've been told that not only is it best to get under the table, but you got to put one of these over your head.
Yeah, that'll keep you safe. You won't see what's coming.
did he bite?
He drank up and left.
That's great.
Well, one of the things that we've been doing for the past several weeks is the recipe of the week. And for new listeners, the challenge that I put out to Manny and Ashley was to come up with a tasty and satisfying meal for a family of four that does not break the bank and can be put together in under 2 hours. What tasty morsel do you have for us this week?
Well, I thought I would compete with McDonald's and Burger King and the rest of them and suggest a variation on hamburgers. I call it the Organic Frisco Bacon Cheeseburger and Spicy Onion Fries. And for anyone who's been to San Francisco, it's a specialty up there. They take sourdough bread, San Francisco sourdough bread, and grill it and make a traditional hamburger on it. So this is a variation of that American tradition that takes its roots to San Francisco. And if you have organic or even any kind of really good San Francisco sourdough bread in your area, it's very easy to make. So basically, it's not even an hour and a half to 2 hours, which was our parameters. You can do it in 40 minutes. In fact, for those people who have to get in the car, drive to McDonald's, wait in line, Burger King or whatever, and come back, it really doesn't take any longer to do it yourself. So the ingredients they can get, as you know, Simon is posting the recipes, and you can get the actual ingredients. So I'll go through them quickly, and then we'll talk about how to cook it. If you have four people, then you need 2 pounds of organic hamburger. And you're going to make patties, depending on the size. If you got younger children, make them smaller. If you got big teenagers playing football and soccer and other sports, then you got to make some bigger ones. So we've designed these to be basically 4 8-ounce burgers, which are pretty good-sized burgers. So you need a pound of apples, smoked bacon, because that's the way the package goes, but you probably won't use anything up near that. You'll end up using probably half the package. Of course, you need a loaf of San Francisco sourdough bread. It's good to have a jalapeno or an Italian pepper or whatever your pepper is your choice. You need a couple fresh sprigs of rosemary. You need a half a pound of butter, although you're going to use a lot less probably than that. Everybody will use a different amount. You need a package of your favorite cheese, cheddar, Jack, Swiss, or in some families you need more than one because some people like Jack and some like cheddar. A couple of organic onions, about 5 potatoes. Golden Yukons are the tastiest, but you got to cook what you got. So add a couple tomatoes, about 6 fresh garlic cloves, and some lettuce, a bottle of organic dill or sweet pickles, whatever your pickle preference is. In some families, you need both. Of course, organic salt and pepper, and you need all those condiments, preferably organic, mustard, mayo, ketchup, whatever you like, and a couple large frying pans or a frying pan and a large grill. I always prefer to grill, but not everybody has that ability. So let's start with the potatoes. Very simple. You scrub each potato with a brush, wash and make sure they're nice and clean. Then you cut them into 1-inch slices, and basically you sprinkle a touch of white pepper on both sides and let it sit while you prepare your hamburger. You take, and by the way, it's a good idea to turn your grill on if you have a grill and get it going right then. And then you take a paper plate or cooking plate and you take a poultry scissors and, you know, cut up the fine leaves of the rosemary, chop it up as small as you can. But you don't have to make them like pepper. Just get them small enough so they dissolve in the food. And then you basically drop the hamburger into the plate, sprinkle all your pepper, and I put a touch of spicy seasoning as we talk. I like, you like Big Tony's. I prefer it without the salt in it. And, of course, you got Fat Boy in your neighborhood, which is a fabulous one. You can get, if you can't find the stores, you can always get them on the Internet. So basically, you stir it up like a meatloaf and then form it into your four patties. And what you try to do is not just round patties. Look at the size of your bread and try and make the patties so when it shrinks, it'll fit on top of the bread. There's nothing worse than having a burger with 2 inches of bread with no burger on it. So, you know, kind of get them so they fit, you know. And then, so you basically get everything ready to go and turn on the pan while you're doing the burgers and throw the bacon in and basically do your bacon while you're prepping the burgers and getting them on the grill. So if you got a child, of course, it's a big piece of sourdough. Cut it in half and make a smaller burger for them. But I think all the mothers listening know how to do that without a problem. So cut your cheese into your slices. I like them a little thicker, quarter inch, because if you're going to put them on a grill, we all know that cheese will melt fast and you won't have much left. So a little thicker piece of cheese. Make it really solid. Then you slice your onions, again, and a couple onions into no more than a quarter inch thick, and set aside enough for anybody. If you got only two people eat onions, leave a couple slices, and make sure you leave at least two per burger, because generally on a sourdough burger, they're pretty long and you need a couple slices of onion, a couple slices of tomato to cover it. It's not like a little round one. So basically, take your pepper, slice it, you know, core it like you do everything else, and cut it long ways. And if your family loves peppers, of course, you can cut more peppers and make a combination of peppers. But generally, it's just for flavor. So you got your tomatoes. Everything's laying there, so ready to go. So you basically cook your burgers. If the grill's going pretty hot, it's only 2 or 3 minutes each, depending on whether someone wants it rare. It's about 3 or 4 minutes for medium rare and about 5 for, you know, close to medium to well done. Then you put your bacon on top of the burger when it's ready, the cheese on top of that, close the grill, shut it off, and it'll melt the cheese. And it can melt pretty fast, so you may want to put a 1-2 minute timer on it to make sure you don't walk away and end up with your cheese destroyed, because it can and will melt and burn. So when it gets the potatoes at the same time or during this process, because it takes a little while to get everything hot and going, you fire up your frying pan, get it warm, and put some butter in and cover the bottom, and you stick the potatoes in. And you give the potatoes about 2 or 3 minutes on the side till they're getting a little crispy on one side. And you flip them over and throw your onions in, and you throw your pepper in with the butter. In fact, you may want to put the pepper in early if you like yours a little more peppery. If you like a light pepper, you put it in towards the end. And you basically stir them around, flip them over as they brown, flip over the potatoes and let them brown on either side. And then when you want, just turn them over and cover them, or else pull them out and put them into a dish and cover the dish so they stay warm. And you take the second frying pan, according to how you do this, in terms of how quickly things are cooking, and you time it, and you put 4 pieces of bread into one saucepan, and when you pull the onions out, you put 4 pieces of bread into that frying pan. And, of course, add some butter to make sure it gets browned and turned over. And the minute that the bread is done, you put the burger and the cheese on top. You add your condiments, the onions, mushrooms, everything, and you serve it with the fried potatoes. So you essentially have a French fry that's done traditionally in the saucepan the way it was done before they invented French fryers back in the 30s and 20s. And this is how basically fried potatoes were served. So you have a fried potato, onion, and pepper mixture that you can cut up, or you can actually pull them out, as I do once in a while, and cut them long ways and turn them into fries. You can actually take that potato once it's cooking in the pan and use a knife and cut them into an inch thick and turn them over individually and fry them on each side so you get a greater fried potato when you're done. It'll take you about 40 minutes or so, and the reality is you can get it down to 25 if you're really good at it. And for some people, sometimes I do it talking to Ashley, and it takes it a little bit longer. So, you know, it all relates. But before we move on, I want to make a comparison. Ashley said to me, "Oh, honey, that's all, you know, you're putting butter in there."
I was just horrified, especially since they say, butter is like the worst trans fat you can have, which although I doubt that because they compare that to margarine.
Well, what happened is there was a drive on in the late 80s to ban butter by the people who made the margarine. So margarine became the rule of the day, and a lot of the groups said, okay, butter's not good for you. Well, 4 years later, after 4 years of margarine in these oils, they said, oh, this is worse for you than butter. So those of you using all these, you know, synthetic butters, you should throw them away and go back to natural butter. Your child and you are much better off eating natural butter. But let's compare it to McDonald's. I went to McDonald's own website, so these aren't numbers exaggerated. These are McDonald's numbers. I took a simple Big Mac and fry. A Big Mac contains 69 different ingredients, including 46, and that's 46 different forms of salt and MSG. It contains 8 different forms of sugar, excuse me, but why is there sugar in a Big Mac? And somebody said that to me. I've been cooking since I was 6 years old. I have never put a sugar in a hamburger in my life, okay? I also don't put 46 different kinds of salt and MSG on it. So at the end of the day, you get this Big Mac, it has more than 1,000 milligrams of sodium that they admit to, because that's only straight salt. They're not required to put the contents of the other 46 forms of salt, MSG, which are still salt, monosodium glutamate. What is it about the word monosodium that makes people believe that that's not sodium, salt? It's salt. So you take a look at that, and then you look at the fries. They contain 350 milligrams of salt and 56 grams of sugar, but that's all they'll admit to. But these items include high fructose corn syrup, which means the sugar is probably double. So in reality, the Big Mac has probably 2,000 milligrams of sodium and as much as 20 or 30 milligrams of sugar. So when you take a look at it and you look at what we call clean labels, which we know is the industry practice of hiding salt and MSG in a product that sounds something rosy like yeast, the numbers could go as much as 5,000 milligrams. And let's talk about, you know, I just gave you a short recipe for hamburger that's basically hamburger, bacon, cheese, and some bread. This is what McDonald's has: bleached wheat flour, a malted barley flour. I've never made anything with a hamburger, malted barley flour, niacin, okay, that's okay. Then we get the high fructose corn syrup. That's in your Coca-Cola. So you're telling me I'm eating a burger that's got as much high fructose corn syrup and sugar as a Coca-Cola, which
But that's
means,
in your burger, right? The high fructose is in the burger.
So if you add a large Coca-Cola or Pepsi-Cola to your meal and then look at the huge amount, because they have 4 to 6 ounces of sugar in them, and then add what is essentially another 2 ounces, you're getting 6 ounces of sugar and a hamburger, fries, and Coca-Cola. But the fun starts. Soybean oil, a burger with soybean oil, partially hydrogenated soybean oil, calcium sulfate, calcium carbonate. I mean, you don't need a preservative in something you're going to eat in 3 minutes. I've seen children eat them in 2 minutes. I've had days where I've run and jogged a few miles with Ashley where I could eat one in a minute,
look,
you know?
They admit
wait,
it.
Go ahead, honey.
They admit it. They put ammonia sulfate and ammonia chloride in it, and that's to counter the E. coli in the burger.
Right. So they got to put ammonia into the hamburger to keep you getting E. coli. So now it's got wheat gluten, which, you know, it's okay. It's got wheat, you know, calcium carbonate. Now we get the fun one, sodium stearyl lactate. Now, who knows what that is? We know sodium is salt, okay. We know it's a preservative. Again, you're eating a burger that you're eating right away. You're not going home and putting it on the shelf. My favorite, datum, which I always thought was a creature in a sci-fi film. I just had out of Star Trek Next Generation. Maybe they chopped him up and put him in the burger. You know, then you get all these words I barely can pronounce that. Azo dicarbonide, well, anyway, we'll move on. Mono and diglycerides, okay, that's another preservative and sweetener. And then exoxylated monoglycerides, okay. Does anyone know what that is? I don't. Monocalcium phosphate, another preservative. Enzymes, okay, good. What's that for?
But that's a synthetic enzyme.
Right, synthetic, and guar gum.
So you can break down this crap they put in their food.
What I really love is when they put guar gum, which is grown in the area of Bhopal, where they had the gas disaster, and where they recently had all those floods and all those people who are having problems, buffaloes dying and from the eating cottonseed. They send you guar gum from India to make sure you get a little poison. Then calcium peroxide.
All right, what does guar gum do? I mean, I've seen it, and I have no clue what possible use it could have.
It's a fixer.
Well, let me give it to you bluntly. If you pick up a McDonald's burger, you know, Burger King, because the only reason I'm singling out McDonald's is they're the only ones that have the courage to put it on their website. And, you know, you can hold that burger, and you can shake it, and it won't break apart. That's what guar gum does. If you make a burger, in fact, one of the things on my menu is don't turn your burger over until it's cooked enough so it won't fall apart on you. But they don't want burgers falling apart on their 16-year-old burger cookers in the kitchen, so they add guar gum. So Here you got a burger you can throw against the wall like a, you know, I don't want to say what, but let's say like a Frisbee, and it'll bounce off the wall and not break. So they use guar gum to hold it together.
So it's just a binding agent.
Well, it's more than that. And it's highly toxic. It's banned in
okay.
Europe.
All right. Sorry, I didn't mean it in that fashion.
Its only purpose is to hold the damn thing together like glue.
Right.
And you can substitute the word glue for it. So they put in soy lecithin. I don't know why, other than the fact it has MSG. Okay, soybean oil, which is, again, a genetically modified food. And high fructose corn syrup, again, which they showed both in the bun and in other things. Sugar corn syrup. So why, if you're going to put high fructose corn syrup and you put corn syrup, that means you're doubling up your sugar. And by the way, I'm only going through some of these.
Wait a minute,
you
skipped over the pickle that has corn syrup. Did you say that?
Yeah, the pickle also.
The pickle relish that they use has high fructose corn syrup in it.
Well, no, what happens is the liquid that your pickle's in, that's high fructose corn syrup. So the pickle absorbs the high fructose corn syrup, so they have to put it on the pickle label.
Plus they use dye.
We haven't even got to the dye yet. So they use another one, xanthan gum, which is pretty much the same thing. And, okay, potassium sorbate, that's basically sugar water with potassium. And they use polysorbate 80, that's sugar. Again, they list high fructose corn syrup 3 different times in their ingredients. And it goes on, there's all sorts of benzoates, hydrogenized corn, sorrel, and wheat. What do you do that? We use that for? Well, they use it to fill the burger because that burger that's 8 ounces of, let's say you get a 6 ounce burger at McDonald's, 2 3-ounce patties. About an ounce and a half of that is corn mixture, soil mixture, and all these various chemicals. So now that you look at your McDonald's burger, look at it carefully and ask yourself, why do they add caramel color to a Big Mac? What is it that needs to be colored caramel?
Because it has MSG in it.
Well, I know that, but still, it's a coloring. But what are they dyeing in the food to try and make it look like caramel? So they add turmeric for coloring, which is the basic ingredient in curry, which gives it a browner look. Maybe they're afraid their burgers will be just gray. And incidentally, that's just the burger. I haven't even got to the fries. With the fries have, guess what? They do have potatoes. I know.
It's not an Easter.
I know. I don't want to start any rumors.
I mean,
they have
potatoes. The big question is, in the usual list of ingredients, does potatoes come in at number one, or is there something else?
No, they put it number one because they were afraid you wouldn't notice them. But wait till we get number two is beef tallow, which is not only in the not really in the fat; it's covered in soaked into the potatoes. That's the secret to why McDonald's fries taste better. They soak it in beef tallow. What is beef tallow? That is the fat from a factory farmed cattle stuffed full of, as Ashley says, soaked with pesticides, fed with antibiotics and human growth hormones. So your potatoes have human growth hormone, traces of pesticides, and God knows what.
And BT toxin.
And to make sure that you don't have enough, they give you beef extract, which comes from the same kind of cattle, but the beef extract has MSG in it. So what do they do then? They're worried a potato isn't enough for flavor. They add natural flavor, more MSG. They use canola oil, hydrogenated soy oil. Okay. And what is natural beef flavor? Well, I started studying that, and that's basically a little bit of beef with MSG. So there's like 3 different forms of MSG in it. Hydrogenized wheat. Now, why do you need to add hydrogenized wheat and milk to potato?
Which is also on the MSG list.
Right.
It has MSG. That's what it is.
Right. And then they add dextrose, sugar. Why are you adding sugar to a potato to make fries? Why don't you just throw it in the pan and cook it? And how about sodium acid phosphate and salt? Okay, the salt you put on afterwards. The sodium acid phosphate is put on the French fries when they cut them up to make sure they don't spoil before they get to the fryer. Because anyone who's made their own French fries know if you cut them, there's a clock ticking. And believe me, they do not make your French fries at McDonald's, Burger King, and the rest of them. They come in huge bags, like, you know, basically garbage bags, and I use that word deliberately because they are garbage. And they just put dimethylpolysiloxane on it, which is, again, designed to make sure that it stays hard, because you don't want those McDonald's French fries to break up in the fryer. When I was a young man working at my parents' restaurant, you had to be very careful with fries. You know how you watch them in back and they flip them up in the air and look like they're flipping pancakes and catch them? If I did that to a real potato when I was young, it would break up the potatoes and my mother would have whacked me with something.
Your mother would have taken you out back and beaten you senseless.
Do you know what my mother called this stuff when it came out in the 50s? She used to call it the devil's food. That's what she called it, and she didn't mean devil's food cake. She thought it was the work of the devil to poison people with things like McDonald's and the rest of them. But the fact is, you can take McDonald's hamburgers and all these things, put them on the floor, and use them as a soccer ball. You couldn't take a real potato and do that. I mean, half the time when you cook potatoes, you've got to handle them carefully when you serve them on the plate so they maintain their appearance so your potatoes break up, whether it's scalloped or any of those, or even baked potatoes you got to be careful with. You can damage them out of the oven. But they've got to be foolproof because they hire teenagers at minimum wage, and they cannot afford to have anything that requires any real skill to cook. It's got to be what we call in business the lowest common denominator. Well, in fast food, that is a pretty low common denominator.
Yes,
so that's our recipe for the day.
And I have to go back because I actually was very horrified when Manny said he was going to do this burger. And he said, no, trust me, you're going to love this when I finish it. And I went from, oh, my gosh, you can't use this kind of fat. And I want to get back on the butter.
Well, before you get on the butter, my point is that if you eat a Big Mac, fries, and a diet, a regular Coke, you're getting about 10,000 milligrams of salt, about, you know, between the sugar and the rest, 6 or 8 ounces of sugar in there. But if you cook this at home, you notice I didn't have salt in that recipe. I use white pepper instead of salt, which is much healthier. There's no sugar in there. There's nothing. The worst thing in there, Ashley singled out a butter. So you've got a meal that's 99% healthy for your children, and I personally don't think butter's unhealthy. So go ahead. You can do your – this is my wife's butter rant.
Okay, my butter rant is when we were going completely organic, I tried all sorts of different organic butters. And then I discovered a butter called Sierra Nevada, and I started studying rennet. And rennet is the main ingredient that they use to actually process the cheeses and process the butters. And I picked that particular company because not only is the butter amazing, but it's all organic. It comes to the milk that's making the butter is all churned from organic fed cows, and you're not getting any of your BT, synthetic hormones. And the rennet is actually a natural organic rennet. They're actually in the rennet that you see in your butters and your cheeses, which start picking those up too, Simon. You're going to hate me for this one. You will discover that a lot of the rennet is synthetic. So they're creating a synthetic thing to increase to make the process much quicker, and people are having trouble with cheeses, not because of the cheese, not because they're lactate intolerant, because some people may be, but a lot of people are having problems with it because of the fact that the rennet is synthetic. So the butter we're using is organic. The cheese we're using is also organic. A lot of the cheeses, not only do they have they have sodium benzoate in it, which are preservatives, and they also use a disodium phosphate in it, which is part of the process of what they use in the cheeses. But with organic, they don't.
So, Simon, this is where we're going to get the other products, right?
Okay. We opened the program looking at the bright side of the RDA idea. Let's talk a little bit about the real world.
Oh, good. You know, Simon, Ash and I got up and we decided we'll do what everyone in America does. We hit the market. We went to the 99-cent store looking for bargains. And I was walking around.
All right, I have to ask this question. I mean, did you wear disguises? You know, so that your friends wouldn't be able to identify you.
Well, I don't want to start rumors that I was wearing a burqa, but I did try.
Well, like, you know, false mustache, a wig. Maybe Groucho Marx glasses.
Oh, yeah, I have all of those. Trouble is, I already have a beard, so I couldn't take it off and go without one. And so, anyway, we'll walk around, and as I joked with you, I said, you know, I feel like the food police. And, you know, I looked around, and I said, you know, common sense and a desire to protect children and all of us around it, we all have to do this, and we have to take a look at what's there. So we walked around and we started looking at every package and we were just appalled. Sort of like a scene out of King Korn and the rest of them where they walked down the aisle trying to find something without, you know, any kind of high fructose corn syrup. So since it was Halloween, I had to go to the candy counter. So I looked around and I said, okay, what am I going to give away this year to kids? I said, well, Nestle's. Let's look at some. Nestle's is a good safe.
Oh, one of the funders of RDA. Oh,
yeah, right.
Must be nutritious for it.
Right.
There
so
we go.
I went to Nestle Butterfingers, and I looked at it, and it said Delight with the letter light in bold letters. I said, wow, this must be light. So I picked up those little ones. You know the ones you hand out? They're less than an ounce, actually 0.7 ounce, 20 gram, those little candy bars, single ones. And I looked at the back and I said, oh, my God. First of all, I had to bring a microscope that was...
You mean a magnifying glass?
No, a microscope.
Okay.
And then I looked at it and I said, okay, maybe I'll get by with a magnifying glass. And I started reading this. And I got to tell you, you talk about a lot of ingredients. They had 32 ingredients in this little thing. I didn't know you'd get 32 inches into 32 things into something smaller than my thumb. Seven of them. It had seven different sugars and 13 different forms of MSG.
In this one little tiny Butterfinger.
And why would you put MSG in a Butterfinger? So I said, nah, it can't be that bad. Then I looked and said, I had 115 milligrams of salt. I don't associate salt with a candy bar. You know, when I have a candy, I don't think of it as salt pork, a Slim Jim, or beef jerky. I think of it as candy. And then as I went through it, it said it had 9 grams of sugar per bar. Well, the whole bar only weighs 20 grams and 9 grams of sugar, but what it doesn't tell you is the rest of it is high fructose corn syrup. So it has 9 grams of sugar, 9 grams of high fructose corn syrup, and 2 grams of flavoring. It had 5 different artificial colorings, 5 different colors to make that color. So as you went through it, I said, wait a minute. I said, this is, you know, maybe I just get a Baby Ruth. So I picked up the Baby Ruth candy bars that looked identical in a similar package and from Nestle's, and I found it had the identical ingredients. So I sat there looking at the two going, well, if I buy the Baby Ruth, why would it be different than the other ones? And I couldn't find any difference, and I just couldn't believe it. So as I looked at all these, I went, my God, they're all the same candy bar but under a different name. Now, I looked at the package. I saw this funny little gray box, but I had to fold the label back, and when I folded the label back, it said, good to know. Balance is the key to healthy eating. Wow, balance your chemicals, right? It says, chocolate confections in moderation can be part of a healthy diet, but you got to fold the flap back to see it.
Yeah, this is supposed to be healthy. One of these little bars is really healthy.
Mm. And then it has another little warning thing in yellow. Good to remember. Smaller candy bars or pieces, it's pretty small, so I'm struggling to read it, are great for portion control. Okay. So I'm only going to hold myself to really almost an ounce of sugar in one of these little candy bars. I mean, I've seen people, you know, nervously in an office pick them up as they walk by and throw them down, you know, and you've seen people put out little bowls of those chocolates. They're killing everybody at the office.
So what I thought, you know, I'm going to go back and look at this because the people in the fun are M&M, Mars, and the Nestle group. Okay, great. I know they don't really influence the RDA, but they're giving the money for the RDA. So then I thought, you know, what exactly is the RDA for sugar and protein? And they say they do not have a percentage daily value on the nutritional facts panel. Sugar has no daily reference value because no recommendation has been made for the total amount of sugar to eat in the day. Really? The government decided that current scientific evidence indicates that protein intake is not a public health concern for adults or for children over the age of 4. Really? Okay, so then Manny read this thing on the Butterfinger. I'm going, okay, that makes sense.
So of course, you know they didn't consult with the American Diabetes Association, any doctors specialized in diabetes, or all the rest of them. And you know, I got a few on the list, but I there's one I got to jump to. I looked at our favorite Chef Boyardee, but I gave it a pass because I saw Campbell's SpaghettiOs and meatballs there.
I used to love these.
And do you know how many children open up a can, throw them in the pan, heat them up, and go, SpaghettiOs. Oh, I'm sorry, that's the ad, right? Well, first of all, the can didn't expire until March 2012. I make spaghetti frequently, homemade, and I've never thought of mine lasting 2 years in a can.
Disgusting in the fridge.
I'm not sure Jimmy would last 2 years in a can.
In fact, you know, you're hard pushed to make it last, you know, two or three days in the refrigerator.
Oh, yeah, and then it gets more interesting. Of course, in bold letters it says, healthy kids' entrees, okay?
Honest to God, it says that in bold letters.
Okay, and, you know, the Campbell's cans have the most interesting thing in the bottom. It says basically to, earn free stuff for your school. If you collect the label, you can get free stuff for your school.
1 point per label. So let's go make this soup.
So here's this healthy kids' entree. A normal serving, which isn't what it says on the can, contains 2,400 milligrams of salt and 64 grams of sugar. So according to the American Heart Association, your child is now getting more than 1.5 times the RDA, if you believe it, of salt in just this one serving of Campbell's SpaghettiO. 64 grams, that's more than 2 ounces of sugar in spaghetti. I make spaghetti. In fact, I served some yesterday out of, you know, tomatoes, which I reduce, organic sweet basil, a little bit of celery to sweeten it, and basically garlic. Sugar? Why would you put sugar in it? And let alone all, and I don't even put salt in mine. So to make it worse, I started going through the label. It's got 62 ingredients. 38 ingredients contain MSG and 4 with sugar. 62 ingredients at 38 with MSG. Asha, can you tell everybody what that means in terms of the MSG?
Well, MSG is monosodium glutamate, and it means that it has excitotoxins, which can overexcite and damage the brain and in the brain tissue in the hypothalamus. You have 38 of them hitting that poor child's brain because they're saying it's a healthy entree for kids. How can that be? And all of the tests from Dr. Olney and various physicians all say
Dr. Blaylock.
They all say the same thing that, you know, this is definitely dangerous and harmful.
In fact, next week, Simon, I know you've invited Dr. Daniel C. Dantini, who runs Sage Medical Laboratories in Florida, and he's going to talk about how this MSG penetrates the brain and other things and causes delayed food allergies. And we're going to go into and give him these same numbers out of his packages, and he's going to talk to our audience about his experience as a doctor and how these affect them. He's written a brilliant book called The New Fibromyalgic Remedy.
Oh, he's brilliant.
Here's a brilliant doctor who has a 70% success rate with his patients, and he's going to talk about why he does and how these chemicals have affected his patients so radically. So it's not just our opinion. These are professionals who have written books who take this position, and Dr. Dantino will explain it further. But as I come back to it, this can of SpaghettiOs contains 11 different foods, products that have genetically modified organisms.
Which we talked about GMOs, and GMOs are made from DNA that has a BT toxin in it, or a bacteria, or a virus. Who knows which one of the above? The BT toxin splits open the gut of a caterpillar. That's the whole purpose. So every single bite of that vegetable that's in that can or that whatever, the wheat that's within the can, has a percentage of a BT toxin as part of its DNA. Now, one of the things that's not clearly discussed, because and it's very disturbing to me, they again say it's a healthy kid's entree. But they base this RDA that everybody's thinking, okay, this is the RDA I'm going to do, they're basing it on a 2,000 milligram per day diet. So they're doing this on a 2,000-calorie diet. And now a child is going to have a lesser thing, which they don't put on the can. It could be a 1,400-calorie diet. So the milligrams that they're doing on that can are based on 2,000 calories. So it's never adjusted. It's never fixed. And the parent doesn't know this when they're picking up and looking at this can.
Worse than that, the meatballs are made from beef and pork. We all know that's factory-farmed beef and factory-farmed pork used it, which is another negative agreement. And, Ashley, if you can explain to the audience what are the bad sides of factory-farmed beef and pork, I would appreciate it.
Well, we could start with the standing around all day in urine-soaked manure and in cages and poorly treated, and it's so bad, McDonald's, when we read it off, they had to put ammonia into their burger. They stayed it right on there because that's the only way they can kill the E. coli. And then they're fed the BT toxin corn, which is not part of their diet. Their natural diet is a natural habitat of what they can break down is grass. And they're force-fed BT corn, which has this thing that splits open the gut of the caterpillar. And the cattle will die within 140 days because it's so toxic to them. So what is it going to do to the humans? Well, let's feed this to the kids. I don't think so.
So, again, in bold letters, I have it right in front of me. It says, healthy kids' entrees. And it says, you're getting 20% of daily vegetables. Wow. But they don't tell you you're getting 38 ingredients, salt, MSG,
GMO,
pesticides, and all these other things. And you wonder why we have an obesity problem, a diabetic problem, autism, and all these
and
problems.
And the cancer's up in children.
Yeah. And it's from eating products like this.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do. And this is a rather snidey thing to do to the food industry. We're going to take a very short musical break.
Here comes the sun, doo 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 doo. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right. Little darling, it's been a long, cold, lonely winter. Little darling, it feels like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun, doo-doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun, I say it's all right. The smiles return into their faces. Little darling, it seems like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun, doo-doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun, I say it's alright.
Don't you think that should be the theme song for the RDA people?
You know. I think their motto is "What you don't know won't hurt you." <laughs> You know?
I'm just very disappointed in all of it because I have such blind trust. I mean, my father was in the war. He was a captain in the war. And I, you know, I was raised on, you know, trust the government, trust the people who are doing, you know, whatever they put out there, trust it, you know. And it's very disappointing.
The difference between California and Ohio is evident right there. In California, you're suspicious of them all.
I have blind trust.
But, you know, it's not only SpaghettiOs, Simon. Campbell's Cream of Chicken Soup, which is really fascinating to me, is something we got to get into. The can is at 11 ounces, but they say the serving size is 8 ounces. You know, it's one of those cans where you pop the top off, and when you look at the size, you just throw it into a pot or into the microwave, you heat it up, and you serve it to your kid. And you actually say, well, why do you use a different serving size than the can contents? Well, obviously, it's to hide the contents. So it took Ash and I a calculator in a couple minutes to figure out what the real totals were, not what they were putting on the package. And it goes something like this. When you look at the can, which we know everybody uses as a single serving, it really says the serving is 2.5 servings per can, 4 ounces.
Based on a 2,000-calorie diet.
So you look at the can and you go, a third of that can or less than that really is one serving? Oh, please. So that part of it has 870 milligrams of salt, but the entire can, which is the real serving, has 2,175 milligrams of salt per can. So if you're giving your child a can of chicken soup for lunch, that's way above the amount. And, you know, the RDA, as I said, the American Heart Association, for an adult is 1,500, let alone a child. And so basically they send a can. This can contains 36% of the RDA of salt per day. That's not true. It contains more than the American Heart Association, almost the total that's required according to the manufacturers. And, again, it's got another label, collect your labels, fundraising at school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you eat this and take a label, you can help your school.
And get healthy. I don't think so.
Yeah. and if you think that that's any better or worse than the other things, Ash and I looked at a package of Fruit Loops, okay, which is made by Kellogg's. That was a smart choice. They finally recalled the smart choice label, which we wrote about in one of our books, and how the industry got together, created a label, and they plastered all over the fruits called Smart Choices. So parents knew right away when they saw that label, it was a safe meal. Well, listen to Fruit Loops. I mean, Fruit Loops has about 20 different ingredients, but let's just highlight the fun ones. It has, these are the colors, red, number 40, blue, number 2, yellow, number 6, turmeric color, and blue, number 1. And then it has annatto color, which I don't know what the heck that is, but so it's got 6 or 7 synthetic colors, and, of course, as your favorite, natural flavoring, whatever that is.
Oh, I feel safe.
So Fruit Loops.
I am waiting for someone to tell me what natural flavorings really are.
It's hidden MSG.
Well, it is hidden. And natural flavoring is defined very clearly by Eric Schlosser in his seminal book called Fast Food Nation. And came out in the late 90s. And for anyone who's feeding their child these foods, that is the Bible of what is wrong in the industry. It is a shocking book that was a bestseller about what is in food. I'll give an example. Fruit Loops is so healthy, it's 41% sugar by weight.
Again, this is based on 2,000 calories, saying it's for kids, and not to letting the parent know it has this much sugar, which is incredible to give that to a kid.
So the serving, which is 1 ounce, which is way too small for any normal person, contains 12 grams of sugar. That's 3 teaspoons. So so if you really take a look at a full serving of what a normal person would have, it's got 7 or 8 teaspoons of sugar. So kids frequently put sugar on. If not, they just put milk over it. So then it's got 8 grams of trans fat, which people recommend you don't eat trans fat anyway during the day. And by the way, that's more that's in butter. So Fruit Loops, you're giving your child a bowl of Fruit Loops, he's getting more trans fat than you do if you put a big hunk of butter on a piece of toast and give it to him. Then worst of all, we all know fiber's a big deal. You see the ads, get fiber in your breakfast. So, you know? So So there's only an ounce of fiber per serving in the entire thing. So you take a look at it and you go, well, what's the sense of giving your child a cereal that has almost no fiber, that's 41% sugar, and contains about 20 other different ingredients. And those ingredients include genetically modified cottonseed soy oil, whole or oat flour, wheat flour, corn flour. Now, you can't make anything in this world without corn. I'm not even sure that my car isn't made with corn. Well, I drive a German car, so it's not corn.
Man, it's definitely going to be GMO.
But, you know, again, hydrogenated vegetable oil. What's that for in a child's breakfast cereal? Sodium ascorbate. You look at all these things. How about pyridoxin hydrochloride? Okay. That's a
boy, that sounds something I want to yum down.
Yeah, oh, it's good for your kid. It's also in the box.
It's, believe it or not, it's a synthetic form of vitamin B6. Oh, yeah, shoot your kid up on synthetic vitamins. Then, you know, they make a synthetic thiamine hydrochloride vitamin B1. So you take a look at these. So basically what you have is sugar, GMO products, a bunch of synthetic flavors, and then a bunch of synthetic colors like red, blue, 40, blue number 2, yellow number 6. All three of those have been known to cause hyperactivity in kids. The yellow number 6 banned in Europe, and they're trying to get all of the other manufacturers to ban all of these other colors. If not, they're probably going to demand that they're removed. And I also find interesting on Fruit Loops is somewhere in the back bottom, and sadly they couldn't create a flap like Butterfingers do to hide it. It says, kids, this may contain a product or promotion advertisement. Remember, you should get a parent's permission before you buy anything online or give them information about yourself, because they want kids to go to their site online to order little trinkets and toys. So basically, you know, I don't appreciate as a father, I wouldn't appreciate some products suggesting that my child get on a computer and contact them directly and give personal information and the rest of them. I mean, that's not a good example, nor is it anything I think any parent wants their child to do. Granted, it's Kellogg and they're a major corporation, but their track record isn't so wonderful about letting personal information out. So, you know, why are they gathering information on children around this world? I don't understand that one either.
And to want kids to do this and then know that so much of it not only has dyes and all these synthetics in it, but it has, like you keep saying, Manny keeps saying hydrolyze this, hydrolyze that. It means that it's a synthetic form of MSG, hydrolyzed anything, hydrolyzed oat flour, hydrolyzed plant protein, hydrolyzed soy protein, hydrolyzed wheat. You see it all the time. You feel I always felt comfortable because I'd see the wheat. I go, oh, I don't know what hydrolyzed means. It means it's synthetically made with MSG, which is an excitotoxin that damages parts of the brain.
Now, back to the RDAs and our opening conversation. Why is there so much MSG and sugar in Fruit Loops and other products? Because it tastes like garbage without it. But if you went and made cereal for yourself or you cooked natural cereals, you wouldn't put salt, sugar, MSG, and all these different products into it. The same way my hamburger recipe has 4 or 5 ingredients, and McDonald's has, what, 64?
Oh, jeez.
It's
illogical to buy, like, a box of oat cereal when you can go buy oatmeal. And oatmeal, organic oatmeal, consists of no GMO, oats, and you add water.
Okay. So, Simon, I want to do one little thing here. I mean, we've talked about children a lot. I think it's time for us to go to adult time. So this is the adults-only portion of this show. And it's not XXX, but it's pretty adult. I picked up a bottle of Party Time Strawberry Daiquiri Margarita Mix. I mean, what's a party without strawberry daiquiris and margaritas? But, you know, people have gotten in the habit of buying these mixes, throwing them in, throw some ice and tequila or rum in there, cook it up. Well, I've never looked at the bottle. And granted, some of us at times, by the time we get pouring it in there, can't read the bottle very clearly anyway, but we'll forgive them. But let's listen to what's in these mixes. High fructose corn syrup, okay, the double helix, corn syrup, which means they have two forms of sugar.
GMO,
yeah,
all the caterpillar splitting.
Okay, propylene glycol, I presume that's a preservative. Carbamoxycellulose gum, I guess that's to make your daiquiris bond, and I don't mean that in a psychological sense. And your favorite, artificial and natural flavors. Wow. And, you know, the strawberry has to look like strawberry, right? So they put sodium benzoate, red 40, and blue 1 for the coloring.
And sodium benzoate is high sodium, and it's a preservative.
So what is missing from this? There's no strawberry in the bottle.
Right.
So your strawberry daiquiri has no strawberry. So think about it. You know, I mean, we've all partied hardy. You know, it's a Memorial Day weekend. You're barbecuing. The daiquiris are flowing. And over a 5 or 6 hour party, you'll have people have 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, well, you know, too many daiquiris, too many margaritas.
So then we wondered if the hangover was a result of strictly whatever they put in it, or was it as a result of the syrup?
Well, you know, anyone who's...
The faux syrup.
Anyone who's partied when they were younger and had too many sweet daiquiris back when they were real will tell you that can be a nasty hangover, mixing alcohol with a lot of fruit juices and stuff. But my goodness, mixing the alcohol with synthetic corn syrup and color dyes and all this other stuff is just insane. So if you're eating, if you have like 4 daiquiris and you're using half and half, that means... You know, if there was 6 ounce daiquiri, that means you had 12 ounces of high fructose corn syrup, which means you probably had in there 4 or 5 ounces of pure sugar, as well as all these different colors. So,
and the worst part of high fructose corn syrup, just to go back on things we've said in the past, is not only because it's GMO is it bad for you and high full of pesticides, but the liver cannot process and break down the corn syrup. It cannot break down high fructose corn syrup. So you're going to be toxic, and it's going to cause problems with the liver because the liver, and then you have problems with the kidneys because the kidney can't detoxify the body, and then you have pancreatic and insulin problems. So there's a whole thing that happens off that one simple little daiquiri.
And if I... And, Simon, let me add a moment of humor. There's a movement on, as you, I know you're not a big football fan, but there's a movement on around the country to make the Monday after the Super Bowl, the beginning of February, a national holiday because everybody parties so much. Well, the truth is, you know, when I was in an office, Monday after the Super Bowl looked like a zombie parade on Halloween. The amount of work done in the office is zero. The amount of Alka-Seltzer and other suitable items is high. I used to listen to my employees. I could hear them groaning walking down the hall past my desk or the
and
desk.
And that was before they had all these chemicals, Manny.
Yeah. Well,
so
no,
it's got to be worse.
I mean, even 6 years ago, I would still show up in an office periodically. The day I used to love watching them, I would sit there and just giggle. And what I would do sometimes is, when I was really in a mean spirit and I got to have some fun mood, I would drop a big file on someone's desk and said, I need this reviewed by lunch. And it would look at me with eyes that would look like they were going to fall out. And I would go back to my office and close the door and laugh hysterically. Then I'd come back a couple minutes later and say, just joking. But, I mean, they would just go into a hangover panic. Because, and it's not just the alcohol, and throw in the imagine seeing Doritos, which we went through last week, and Cheetos, which was on my list for today. And Cheetos, for example, has 200 milligrams of salt in just basically a handful with a gram of sugar. So everybody knows the average person will eat a half a bag of Doritos or chips during the game, have a few margaritas along with it. And by the way, the Doritos has 28 ingredients, which is less than Dorito, which has 39. So I guess it only has 15 ingredients with MSG in it. So, wow, maybe I should be eating Cheetos instead of Doritos. I only half poison myself.
And then in these synthetic compounds with sodium, a lot of them you have to use, like the salt, as we discussed, has aluminum because it is an anti-caking agent, which causes toxicity, and it's a neurological damage to the brain. So it's really, aluminum is really bad.
So we all read about how kidney and liver transplants are up. There's a huge waiting list for them. Dialysis is higher than ever. In fact, those of you who reach Medicare will notice that one of the significant questions of Medicare is whether you've had renal failure problems, dialysis, or on those lists, because Medicare will not cover them. So why are we having this huge list of kidney and liver transplants? Well, just look at these ingredients and look at the shelf and read them. And Ashley met someone in the market, she can tell you about, a lady who had a, I believe she had a kidney
transplant. She had a kidney transplant, early 30s, and she is now making fantastic homemade pickles and tomato sauces. And we had a discussion on chemicals. She had no idea prior to this, and even while she was on the waiting list for a kidney, that all these chemicals were in the food making her toxic and sick.
And then we find people who go to dialysis, come out, and maybe they won't go to McDonald's, but they eat all this packaged food, which is the same chemicals that caused them to be on dialysis in the first place.
Because no one's informing.
Right. So,
right.
You know, we're doing nothing to relieve the situation, and medical costs are going up. So for those people who are against Obamacare and some of the provisions and the various health issues, you want to stop the cost of medicine? Change the foods. We could cut our medical bills in this country in half, we could cut our sick days in half, and we could cut out kidney transplants in half, liver transplants, and maybe even more by eliminating that. And we haven't even gotten
okay,
issues
I
like
need, I need to break in real quick. We're about to lose our live listeners, but the show will continue, and you'll be able to listen to the entire recording.
So
I hope our dead listeners
stay.
Right. I'm sorry about interrupting you, Manny, but
no,
I just had to.
I was looking at the clock, and I wanted to illustrate the point that there are consequences to eating these foods. In my case, the consequences were it was an 8.5-hour surgery, cancer, and 8 feet of my colon going, and a variety of ailments that followed that are so directly tied to these foods that when I finally figured out and gave them up, I dropped 70 pounds and I'm leading a relatively normal life. I haven't been in a wheelchair nor confined to bed in a long period of time. And we believe in the proof is in the pudding testing. They can say, oh, there are no tests to justify it. Well, everyone we've talked to that has gone on this type of organic change of life is no longer ill, as I point out.
But they combine it with the enzymes,
right,
which we never got into today, which
is a whole
different show.
And as I point out, my closest friend went on enzymes and Manny's diet and enzyme formula, and guess what? He's down from 8 prescriptions to 1, and he's no longer a diabetic.
30 pounds lighter, healthier.
Right. So those people who want to change can buy our books at Amazon or Barnes & Noble, Manny's Diet and Enzyme Formula, and Arthritis, Inflammation, Gout, Crohn's, IBD, and IBS, and they can take a look at ways they can prevent themselves from becoming ill eating the foods that we're describing.
And we have over 3,500 research articles and references, and with the new book, we have another 1,000 that we've done, which the new book will be out on December 1, which is It's Not Your Fault.
So, I have a question for you before you wrap up.
Sure.
You have been going to the market, and it's forced you to look at labels. Has it alarmed you as much as it has alarmed us?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we're almost out of time, but sat in front of me is a little can of what looks absolutely harmless, and I'm sure it's in many, many kitchen cabinets. It's Progresso breadcrumbs.
Mm.
I mean, you know, Italian style. I mean, they're great. You know, you want to make pork chops or something like that, you know, or fry some fish. Progresso's the way to go. I mean, you know, this is the Cadillac of breadcrumbs. Yeah, they're very fine. It's not like making your own.
Well, you know, Simon, Simon, I wouldn't eat a Cadillac either. But, you know,
but I want to hear what's in the can.
Well, no, no, let's wait till next week and let's start, because we're at the end of our time. Let's start the show off with your Progresso, and let's talk about some Thanksgiving things that can be cooked since we're craving over Thanksgiving. And some of these things we're talking about, and Dr. Dantini can come along and take a look at these and talk about delayed food allergies from eating all of this food. What do you think?
Well, I'm in agreement. The next time you're out in the store, check out Progresso brand breadcrumbs and just take a look at the ingredient list.
I can't wait.
And, Simon, I promise our listeners, we're not done shopping at the market. We will have a list of products for next week that people find commonly on their shelf.
We do need to wrap this up. I really want to thank both of you for taking time out to talk with me today, and I'm sure we'll be doing this again next week.
Looking forward to it, and hello to our friends in Louisiana.
And our best to everybody who's recovering from this terrible, terrible travesty.
Yeah, I did try to get an update on what's going on the ground, but I left it a little late to put the inquiry in. Hopefully we'll have an update next week.
Oh, that'd be great.
I'm looking forward to it. So okay. I hope everybody enjoys Halloween.
Happy Halloween, everybody. Happy Halloween, Simon.
And Jan and I are coming over for some Butterfingers.
Oh, yeah, right. Can't wait to serve them up.
I'll talk to you next week.
Bye, Simon.
Bye.